Stage lights cold as a winter rain. One breath, one prayer, then the world went strange. Crowd froze up when the thunder cracked. Truth on a mic and a life attack. He talked about hope in a storming land. Bible in the heart and a promise in his hands. But a shadow reached from a coward's perch. Cut down a son in the middle of church. And I swear if the tables turned the other way, y'all know there'd be fires in the streets today. But here we stand with candles and a folded flag, begging God for mercy on the road we drag. How dare they steal the breath from a faithful man? How dare they stain the grass where his boots once stained? They call us evil, point at our cross, then pull that trigger and reckon no cost. If it were theirs, there'd be some. Ain't letting go of your hand.
Give that one a second.
Yeah, Bill pretty hadn't, powerful.
Bill hadn't heard that one before. That was just written, actually, by someone or something called Diesel. Is that a? It's a guy, obviously. I don't know if it's a whole band called that or if that's just his nickname, but I'll put the link to the YouTube video of that. It's kind of been circulating. You may have heard it, but I'll put the link to that on today's page. Today is September 14th, 2025. My name is Erin Ryan. You're listening to We the People Radio, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And in the co-pilot seat, we have
Bill Cundiff.
We're doing everything backwards today. Today is backwards day. So we don't have a backwards week, I guess. Interesting that today's program, actually, the guests for today, I had tried to schedule them. I've been trying to schedule them for about 6 weeks, and there have been things getting in the way. Odd things, you know, things we had to cancel, run some archives. Bill's mom was moving, just scheduling. And so we got this all set up, and on Wednesday, after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, one of my first thoughts was, okay, that's kind of weird. This Sunday, our first hour is about investigating mass shooters, and the second hour is, I had already called it, trans rights are killing us. So, interesting and odd and sort of spooky, but it's time, I guess, we stand up. We either hide. I had people say we should cancel the show. Bad topic, you know, it's dangerous, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yep, nope, no, we're not doing that. We've been at this for 15 years, and we've covered a lot of topics people didn't want us to cover. And we'll keep covering them, actually. So if you would like to go back into the archives, send this to friends. The show is free to listen to, free to send to other people. If you have ideas for guests, if you'd like to sponsor, you can find everything at wethepeopleradio.us, including our phone numbers, because we like to hide right in the open. Our guest this hour, and I'm hoping I'm guessing his name correctly. I believe I pronounce it correctly. If it's Nils Gruvelius. Okay, how'd I do?
Well, I'm fantastic.
Did I get it?
Say hello. You got it. Close enough for government work.
How's that? Oh, no, that's bad. That's bad. That is kind of what I do.
No, it's good. It's like, Nils is like the plural of nothing, lots of nothing, Erin, and I want to wish a good afternoon to you and Bill and everybody in Northern California, Southern Oregon, wherever else people might be listening.
They listen all over. And I have to tell people, I don't want to cheat them out of the backstory here in case they're not looking at the online. You are a private investigator. And you were first licensed as a private detective in 1992. I have it on good authority. Kimberly sent it to me. You got your start as a soldier conducting clandestine security, border and counterinsurgency operations in the Pacific, Mediterranean, and Latin America. And then on a contractual basis, I think is where this gets interesting, you conducted private clandestine operations in various nations.
Well,
I like the various nations.
A man has to earn a living, right?
Exactly. And you are an agent of the Pinkerton organization.
I was. I've been out of the Pinkertons a long time.
Too bad. I was wanting to know how that worked. And you?
Well, I was with them for some years.
So yeah.
We can talk about that. I wanted to give a quick shout out to an old colleague in Reading.
Oh.
There's a man in Reading who's a great civil engineer named Kevin Maple, who was in the anti-tank platoon of 1st of the 58th Infantry a long time ago. And he was a good man, a good hand, and I miss his company every day. And he's within your listenership.
Nice.
So somebody will probably tap him on the shoulder and tell him, Maple, tune in. Yes, a long time ago I got recruited to the Pinkerton service after the Army. And the Pinkertons did everything in Los Angeles that the FBI couldn't do or be seen doing, what the LAPD couldn't contract to do, what the Los Angeles County Sheriff had outside its imprimatur. So we conducted industrial undercover operations and protective investigations, including threat assessment, and keeping unsubs under surveillance, an unknown subject, trying to identify people making threats undercover. We had an old system of clandestine communication in the Pinkerton service that was entirely analog, that dated to the 19th century, that was very useful to us. We had an indoctrination process, and the men and women of the Pinkerton service, when I was recruited, weren't all, former soldiers or military or police or that sort of thing. Some of them were quote-unquote amateurs like Alan Pinkerton was in the 19th century. We had two very attractive, capable Canadian women who worked out of our office. I won't name them because they were clandestine and pretty much everything you could need in a surveillance or pretext operation, protective work, that kind of thing. No one would ever make them as agents of the Pinkertons. We had a lot of very talented people.
Interesting.
That's cool. Well, I know that in the thing that caught my eye, especially, I didn't realize that we would be so fresh off of one of these monumentally horrible event, but this, I don't know if this is from your book or it's a quote from you, but it was in the information I received from your publicist, and it said, "What all mass shooters share isn't ideology. It's a toxic mix of personal grievance and pathological self-pity. They interpret cultural, political, and economic events as personal attacks, fueling delusion and violence. And until we confront the mindset, no policy will stop the next tragedy." And I thought, wow, no better timing.
Those are my words. All of these people are psychopaths, Aaron. And what a psychopath is a man or woman who is bereft of conscience. When Brian Koberger sat in court and listened to the families of his victims give their recitation, that was fully for him. He enjoyed that. To be macabre, he enjoyed every moment of that. He hoped to have a long...
Your signal is cutting out on us a little bit.
Okay. I'm moving closer to a window, Aaron. Is that better?
Okay.
Well, no, I'm in the foothills here, and the infrastructure of California is crumbling. I think you've seen that where you are. And sometimes my city gets in and out. I get a better telephone signal when I'm operating in Mexico and Guatemala than I do in Los Angeles. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
So, yeah, these people all have some characteristics in common. They are all psychopaths. psychopaths have pathological egocentricity. And I'm going to point something out, and this is often the nexus between these transvestite mass killers, assassins, whatever, and the other ones, is the need to be treated specially just to feel normal. And I don't want your listeners to believe that every transvestite is a threat or a mass shooting. But people who have aesthetic self-pity, pathological egocentricity, and a unique sense of personal grievance are a real problem. And the machinery of the left has institutionalized support of this behavior, creates more and more of it, and a greater propensity to violence. People notice that the left has created a rubric that catches all things called professorism. What Aaron, Bill, and Nils discuss in this radio show today would be termed stochastic terrorism by certain people on the left, and what that means is our mere words are violence. They aren't words, they are violence and violent ideas. And so they consider it justified that they take violent action against us when we are merely talking.
Yeah, which is something regular people, I mean, most of us, you know, some people have a short fuse, you know, and they'll start screaming at you or whatever, but they don't run home and grab their 30-06 and race to the top of a tall building. I mean, that just, there's nothing normal about that.
Well, there's nothing normal about that, and I don't think the FBI investigation of this is concluded. I don't want to think that this is part of a network of people who organized the shooting, but it exists within the realm of possibility. I do believe the terrorist assassination that Luigi Mangione undertook last fall, that I believe was part of a network. And have gotten down the Israeli embassy staffers. I think that that's part of, you know, communist organization and direct action, just as Lee Oswald's mission of John Kellis. What Lee Oswald was in 1963 was he was the face of Antifa. And
we're kind of losing you to the point where now it's kind of hard to pick up. How about this? Let's take a quick break, and while we do that, we'll have David maybe call you back and see if we can't get a little bit better signal going on.
Okay.
But I'm kind of putting him under the gun because I just shot him two songs.
Okay.
And oddly enough, the first song is a Kenny Loggins song. You wouldn't think Kenny Loggins would have a song that would fit, but he does. How are we doing,
okay,
David? All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get Nils back on the line. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us.
I'm always speaking my mind when I'm better off by my tongue. I'm a bad joke at the wrong time. Hell, I'm a legend of my own mind. I'm good for some, but I'm not for everyone. Yeah, I'm good for some, but I'm not for everyone.
And that doesn't mean you don't have to listen to us, right? You can change the channel. We've always said that with this show. People are like, well, some people might not like it. I'm like, you can always, always stop listening. We hope you won't, but you might learn something. Nils, do we have you back?
I'm standing by right here.
Ooh, hey, that sounds awesome. Yeah, we were missing some of your good info. Okay, so with these people, like, what did, over your career, you know, I'm sure you saw lots of these people, you know, that are kind of part of this systemic erase the people who speak out kind of movement. I think it's getting more? Are there more of them now? Or we just hear about it more?
Well, obviously it is. I mean, take a quick look at Blue Sky, at some of the postings on there about the attempted assassinations of Donald Trump, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, all of the other direct action that various Marxists have taken. This young man, Mr. Robinson, was radicalized in college, obviously. He was living in some sort of bizarre relationship with a transvestite that apparently was his love interest, not just his roommate. Apparently some of his friends were aware that he was involved in these sorts of things. When I look at the profile of him, Aaron, Bill, what this guy looks like is the idiot gamer kid who sits around smoking dope and eating fast food and making swatting calls on people who he used to be friends with. And this is just another form of aggression here. My belief is he thought he wouldn't be caught. That's how naive he was.
Yeah, because he didn't really have a very solid escape plan. And in a day and age when there are cameras everywhere, you'd think he'd... I think that's what's kind of fueling the idea that he's a fall guy for, you know, some wider narrative.
Well, there are a lot of people who are quick to see that. There is a wider narrative, but it's not that there was a paid hitman who did the hit and he's the fall guy.
Right.
We fell into this trap with Lee Oswald and Sirhan Sirhan, where people create garbage theories about who did the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers, and it was no one other than Oswald and Sirhan. Let me point something out. The man who virtually created the absurdity that the CIA was behind the assassination of John Kennedy was a character named Mark Lane, who wrote a bunch of books about it, trying to absolve the hard left and Oswald for culpability in the assassination of a war hero president. Mark Lane was a communist who ran for Congress in New York, and then the last person that Jim Jones saw down in the jungles of Guyana before he assassinated Congressman Ryan and poisoned 1,000 of his followers and committed suicide was his lawyer, Mark Lane. So you have to follow the networks of the hard left, and it's too easy to just reflexively say they are liberals. They are not liberals. That's like comparing FDR to Joseph Stalin. It doesn't bear any real comparison. Now, the hard left is taking over the Democrat Party. More and more, the party of JFK is now the party of Oswald. You know, they love these guys for their ability to organize, to direct action, to conduct riots on cue. None of these riots take place in cities without city partnership. You're not going to see these riots in places not run by Democrats, because they're counting on the Democrats never really punishing them. And the Democrats want the organization, the fundraising, and the energy. The problem with all this is eventually, you know, it's like teasing a drunken date if you're a young, vulnerable woman. Sooner or later, he's going to want you to remove your clothing and do the deed, okay? And that's what the hard left is now demanding of the Democrats. You'll notice that the Democrats can no longer hold an organic primary. They have to have synthetic ones, because if they hold an organic primary in their nomination process, they probably wind up with a Marxist candidate, someone like Lexi Banana or, you know, AOC or whatever they call her.
Yeah, there are some alternative names there.
Right. So that's where what we're in. And I'll say the opening shots of this insurgency were really all the way back in 1999. You remember the WTO protests in Seattle, where they absolutely inverted the city.
Oh yeah.
And they brought in Marxist jerks from all over the world to riot across the city. Well, the WTO people, the NWO paid them off, gave them all of the money that they wanted for their quote unquote green organizing and environmentalism and all this other stuff. And they just used that money to foment more Marxism. You know? That was the opening salvo. That was the Fort Sumter of what it is that we're facing now.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I don't think most people would connect the dots all the way back, but you're right.
Now, so the hard left crawled in bed with the jihad. The same attorneys who represent the jihadis in Guantanamo and whomever gets captured in Somalia or whatever are the same ones representing Mangione and representing Rodriguez, and they'll be representing Tyler Robinson. Even as the left now declares that Tyler Robinson is a Trump-voting conservative Mormon from Utah, and they'll try to pretend as if they had absolutely nothing to do with this, they're going to defend that boy all the way to the end. They'll be begging for his life. They'll be filing habeas petitions and doing all the usual garbage.
Well, that's going to be a little bit difficult now that they've found this transgender connection with him. Which I kind of suspected from the very beginning that there was transgender ties to this, and they haven't proven it, but give it time.
It just keeps happening. Yeah. I mean, after a while, when it keeps happening, you're kind of an idiot if you don't just recognize.
Well, it reminds me of an old joke from the 1980s, you know, how can you tell that your roommate is gay? Well, I'm not going to repeat the punchline. It's too filthy, okay? You know, this thing speaks for itself.
Yeah.
And Bill is precisely correct here.
Yeah, well, and so when you have, back to that quote you had, you know, the toxic mix of personal grievance and pathological self-pity, and then they're interpreting culture, politics, and economic stuff as personal attacks. So,
that is correct.
And then, you know, the other part of it that I know is kind of being hit ad nauseum, but in a lot of circles deflected, they don't seem to think there's anything wrong with calling people, you know, Nazis or, all this other stuff. You know, you're a fascist and you're a this and that. Well, they feel
kind of justified. Well, it's meant to intimidate you out of participation. It's meant to separate you from your children when your children go off to college. Your children sit there in college and start wondering, is my mom a Nazi? That sort of thing, based on what their idiot professor is saying. These colleges, as Bill Moss said a couple of months ago, these are a-hole factories and we're paying for them. If I were to wage war on this problem, At a fundamental level, I would dry up the money for the. I would do that is, I would remove the student loan guarantees completely, and I would allow students who had been duped into taking $250,000, you know, homoerotic poetry degrees over an 8-year period to bankrupt out their student debt. When the woke bank system takes a beating on this, that will be the end of free money for the universities, and the universities, these douchebag hippie professors who shovel garbage into the minds of our most impressionable youth in the name of education. And we also have to take a much harder look at the Marxist organization of the teachers' unions, top to bottom, from Randy Weingarten all the way down to the municipal level. Every one of these organizations takes in taxpayer money and uses it to buy political people.
Yeah.
It's a money laundry, and we need to go after that. The teachers' unions are a huge problem. They've become a self-regulating hydra. The teachers union here in California, the California Teachers Association, is a Leninist super PAC. That's all that it is.
You're obviously very shy.
I am. I'm blushing right now. I'm turning purple. You've empurpled me, young lady. Bill, stifle that woman and get her to behave herself up there in Northern California.
Way too late for that.
Oh, it's so great. It's so great. People are like, you shouldn't say things like that. I'm like, oh, I know people. I know people who go way farther than I do. And I'm like, you are way high on my list. Oh, I wish we could loiter together. That would be so much fun.
Well, here we are occupying their holy airwaves. Can you imagine? There's probably somebody listening, tuning into this right now, who is turning some weird color and running their Prius off the road. They're so upset. They're going to go home and they're going to kick their rescue dog and tell their transnormative obese partner to dye their hair in a fresh new fluorescent color. Because of what they've heard on the air today, all of this stochastic terrorism floating around in the atmosphere.
It's going to get worse, too.
I do need to correct you. It's not a rescue dog. It's a rescue donkey. I mean, we've seen it all.
Yeah, there was one. I might have taken a phone call from someone who was upset they couldn't get into HUD housing because they had a support giant bird. Some kind of giant bird. And I'm like, don't they live in a cage? I mean, like a pet, right? Well, no. Mine gets free run of the house, but I guess it eats the furniture and pecks at the walls. I'm like, okay, well, that'll be a problem for you.
Yeah, decorates the furniture on the regular. Yeah.
Yeah, then there's that.
Yeah, my spirit companion animal, my emotional support animal, is a 14-foot saltwater crocodile. And I've named him Felix, and how dare you not give me preferred seating on my Southwest flight. I'm gonna file an EEOD complaint with the United States Department of the Interior immediately. I can't imagine.
I like that, the Department of the Interior. We are renaming departments. We have a Department of War now. I think a Department of the Interior. I think we, you know what, I'm gonna make a note about that.
Well, I'm the former Undersecretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior. I joined up from there. I used to be the director of amphibious sales at Chappaquiddick Oldsmobile after they laid me off from that outfit. I mean, we had a little problem. We were losing blondes in the pond. I mean, you know.
I think our engineer just fell out of his chair. you know what? We needed, you know, I think the world needed a break today. I was thinking this was going to be super serious. I had no idea. I should have known, though. Okay, just fair warning. I looked up your books and I put them on the site because I thought they were fun and I thought we should promote them, right? And so I did.
Well, I have a much better book coming out. The old books are trashy crime fiction, and some people live on trashy crime fiction. I've written my professional memoir entitled The Last Lawman. And The Last Lawman will be printed in June of 2026 by Post Hill Press. And it's all about, working in the DMZ in Korea and rounding up fugitives after the army and some of the work I did in the Pinkerton service, going hard up against confidence men and extortionists and things like that. I think it's worthy fodder. I think it's a very well-written book, and I wrote it myself. That's a big difference between me and General Colin Powell. General Powell couldn't write his own professional memoir, but I executed mine top to bottom, stem to stern, and I think your listeners will like it, even if they hate reading books.
Oh, well, we'll have to promote the heck out of that and obviously have you back on. Well, the reason I mentioned that was when I was on, I clicked on Amazon because I wanted to get the cover art and post it. And it said here, never won much for convention. Grevilleus took a job in a saloon at the age of 13 and gravitated away from school, eventually dropping out. And I was like, this is going to be really awesome.
Well,
I just thought, really, nobody can say that.
Well, my mother used to say to me, and my mother was a ruling class American female of the liberal persuasion. Her family were part of the Canadian-American industrial aristocracy. She used to tell me, you are the least accomplished male in either lineage of your family. You have nothing to be proud of.
Wow.
She broke 3 hair brushes over my head before I was 5. I will have you know. But no, it's okay. She was a Sweetbriar girl and everything. Bless my mother. She was a criminal defense attorney and a very accomplished one. I mean, if you were up on charges for murdering 2 people in the walk-in cooler of a liquor store, she's the kind of lady you want representing you. I mean, she'd, you know, stay up late, do her homework, swear you were innocent even when you obviously were not. And she didn't compromise, and she died almost broke and all of these things because she was a true believer. My parents were both unique individuals. My father infiltrated KKK and citizen council groups in Arkansas in the 50s during the forced integration of the Little Rock Public Schools. He was a Marine Corps veteran of 2 wars, and he was one of those guys who had no fear of any man, but he terrified of the IRS.
Oh.
Yeah, sure. I mean, our government has a unique talent for smashing the best of us, right? Well, we all have to become a little more ungovernable, as they say, indigestible, maybe. And one of the things I wanted to say earlier when we were on break was there are no more civilians, okay? The hard left isn't treating us as civilians as far as they're concerned. You're a legitimate target, Aaron, Bill.
Yeah.
They'd kill you. They'd kill your family. They'd take everything that you have. They'd plow your gravestone under so no one would know where you were or that you ever even existed, okay? So there's no reason to censor your opinions, no reason to walk on eggshells. Don't wear their leash ever,
Yep. Is
my instruction to my friends.
I agree with that 1,000%. And anyone who thinks that being quiet and they don't even have to capitulate, but like I saw it in our congressional town halls, the left was absolutely insane. I mean, just some of the things were just insane. You know, a guy, I'm a Mexican American. How long do I have to carry around this driver's license to feel safe or whatever? It's like, what are you talking about? We all have to carry it around. We're driving. Like, you got to carry it around until you quit driving, you goofball. But
right.
Just
it's
shrieking.
It's performative theater. It's performative theater.
And they're not paid. That's the other part of it. So people were like, oh, well, they were all busted and paid. Well, that's nice. That's what we tell ourselves. But these were not. These were people who live in our community. And the hard part was the good people there either got up and left. I get it. You don't want to hear somebody F you somebody for 90 minutes. I get it. But they got up and left, or they didn't stand up and take their turn at the microphone and speak. So it looked like 100% of the participation, and you see this across the country. So then what do? They say, everybody thinks like this. Not true.
Well, Aaron, I'm going to differ a little bit with you. Mm-hmm. Just a little. Most of these people are paid, and we're paying for them.
Well, okay.
We're paying for them through the SEIU, the California Teachers Association, and all these garbage NGOs, the
Excellent
High Speed
point.
Rail Authority, that sort of thing, lines their pockets with our money. Without public dollars, there is very little leftist organization in this country. That was the purpose of the WTO protest, was to get governments and multinationals and Fortune 500 corporations to pay them extortion. All right?
Yeah.
So my response is go to hell. All right? So
Big fan.
Well,
I mean, because honestly, that'll probably take care of itself. We have to take a really quick break, though, and then we're going to come right back.
All right.
We have such good signal. It's like we just want to talk forever. But our guest is Nils Gravilius, and you should stick with us. You can find this after the fact. Send it to friends and family at wethepeopleradio.us.
You've been talking in your sleep, and it's been boring. going on for weeks, and I've been solving puzzle pieces. High time to come to Jesus. You got skeletons in your closet, spitting all over your face. Every little lie stacked so high, can't keep your story straight.
You see, tough times don't last. Tough people do. Tough people pull themselves up by the bootstraps when they hit hard luck, and they stay strong, and they keep on fighting like they don't know how to lose.
And that's always been true. Always been true. So as you watch all this stuff, Nils, what's your I don't know, prognosis, I guess? Or
we're going to see more of this: bombings, assassinations, and kidnappings. We're in a Marxist insurgency.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take action to separate them from their money, because once we separate them from their money, they're close to being disarmed.
Mm-hmm.
We have to start prosecuting the organizations which foment riots in the cities. I would go after the Portland and Seattle Antifa with a vengeance. Not for lawful protests. They're not doing lawful protests, but for the riots, for the
burning buildings down.
Yeah, for the arson, for the looting, for the vandalism, for assaulting people in public, and ruthlessly go after them and go after their political partners in government, the people paying for it, the people excusing it, the people declining to prosecute, that sort of thing. We have to do this. We're going to wind up like Argentina if we don't. Not just with a Peronist economy, but with a Peronist infrastructure. But go ahead. I'm sorry, Bill.
Well, I was just going to say, to go a step further, I think people need to stop doing business with companies that have these views, that sympathize with these views. Just stop doing business with them. And you know, that they'll feel right away. When people stop spending their money there, they'll have to figure out, you know, there's got to be a better way to make a living, because people need to walk away from this, and that ideology is just too dangerous.
Well, Bill, I agree with you. I want to point out for your listeners that just a few years ago, if you had shared the wrong opinion supporting Charlie Kirk and denouncing the assassination and things like that on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, that sort of thing, you'd be canceled. You'd lose your account.
Yeah.
Thank God that Elon Musk took over Twitter, and that Donald Trump confronted Mark Zuckerberg. Otherwise, we would be much further down the road of complete repression.
Yeah. Well, there are the two biggies, but there's also, you know, there's a lot of websites out there that spew this garbage, and young people are listening to it, and
yes,
they listen to it a lot, and
mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the only view they really hear. Well,
who are the advertisers, right? Look at where you're shopping, you know. Are you, you know, Target lost me decades ago. You know, they were what, anti-gun, I think, was the first place they drove off the trail. You know, Dick's Sporting Goods. There's all these businesses that actually go directly against things that people believe in, and yet they give them their money.
Well,
I broke up with my hair cutter. She didn't vote. I was like, oh, you don't vote? Well, I never went back. I'd been going there for like 15 years.
I
guess I'm kind of mean.
Okay, I'm rather cruel myself. I agree with you all those things, but we also have to take direct action. The bankers who deplatform people, kick them off
yes.
their bank accounts,
yep.
need to be prosecuted. They need to lose their banking charters if they persist, things like that. we can't stand down for any of it. When does the left rest? When do they take a break?
Yeah.
All they do is just change tactics. When it's to their political benefit, they stage riots and arson and looting and all that. And the next day they come out dressed like little Bo Peep and pretend like they're concerned kindergarten teachers. But it's the same people. The ACORN is Occupy, is Free Palestine, is No Kings. It's all the same Marxist hydra. And the man at the top of the food chain for all that in this country is a former president named Baby Lord Husseino.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's their chief organizer. He started the Ferguson riots in 2014 to try to drive Democrat turnout in the midterm elections. His organization created the fiction that Michael Brown was murdered by a Ferguson police officer.
See, that
and they
was
were
the,
set like a coiled spring. Go ahead,
that,
Bill.
That,
I'm sorry,
that,
I never
was the,
you.
That was the gentle giant you're talking about, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to point out that Darren Wilson, the officer who had to defend himself that day, lost his job, lost his career.
Yes.
He paid a huge price, right? And Baby Husseino struts away shamelessly. Him and his idiot wingman, Eric Holder. You know? I'd have Eric Holder in front of a federal grand jury. You know, that man was found in contempt of Congress. Didn't Bannon go to prison for contempt of Congress?
I don't think. Oh yeah, Bannon did. Yeah.
And so did Peter Navarro.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Paul Manafort. Okay. We need to rent relentlessly, ruthlessly, regularly hold them to the standards that they claim they uphold. Merrick Garland is another man in contempt of Congress. And I keep goosing my friends in the Justice Department, demanding to know when Merrick Garland answers for his crimes. He's the man who would get up to the microphone and mouth the words, "No one's above the law." Well,
oh, yeah.
Put that to the test. You know, put this in front of a federal grand jury somewhere other than D.C. or New York, and see what happens to this man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you have all the. You know, Brennan and Clapper, and the list is long.
Yes, and you can't do it in D.C. because their mates will just acquit them in advance. You know, when John Durham sat down to investigate Crossfire Hurricane, they had pushed every single thing over into the counterintelligence realm at the Bureau and denied him access to 90% of the material related to it. And wouldn't allow him to impanel a grand jury anywhere other than D.C.
Yeah.
That's why you wound up with such a weak result from Durham's work.
Yeah, and I kind of had high hopes for him. He seemed like a pretty straight guy.
I don't think he's a bad man. I think he was handcuffed top to bottom, start to finish.
Yeah.
And not just by Merrick Garland, also by Bill Barr.
Mm.
Okay, Bill Barr is another one who can stand in front of that grand jury and give some sworn testimony.
Yeah, I think they all need to be held accountable.
I completely agree.
So, in your storied career, looking at all these different things, why? Why did you wind up doing this? What? Why was this your basically your life's work?
Well, it's like this, Anne. I was always the worst student in every school that I ever attended.
So hard to believe.
They have a tendency to bore me, and when I get bored, I'm somewhat destructive. Right? I get bored in the army, and I have a few drinks, and next thing you know, I'm shooting my mouth off at the wrong time to the wrong person, that kind of thing.
So this isn't something that just happened later in life?
No, it's kind of strange. It's super weird. I've always been this kind of man. When I was 6 years old, I was this man. So I wanted a job that would be emotionally and intellectually satisfying. And intensely kinetic, where I would never be bored, and I didn't have to report to Gracie Pence. I was briefly tempted to become a police officer, but when you're a cop, you're at the mercy of bastards in suits. You're in the political winds. I am completely insulated from politics as a private operator. You can call me a Hessian if you like. I'm happy to be that Hessian, all right? But, like, if I worked at a bank, Bill, I'd just sit there all day fantasizing how to tunnel in over the weekend. So it's much better that I am this.
Yeah. I really relate to that. The idea of doing the same thing every day kind of freaks me out, actually.
Sure, you know, I could do it for a while if I had to support my family. You know, I'd do anything to support my, my kid, that sort of thing. I have a son who's a combat medic in the Army, you know. If I had to live under a freeway bridge and eat canned dog food so that he didn't have to, I'd do it. But I don't have to do that. And Los Angeles is the world's greatest collection, concentration, if you will, of people who are simultaneously hostile, delicate, and wealthy. Mm-hmm. And they always need somebody like me to hold their bacon out of the fire.
Wow.
It's probably true, too. It seems like you would be really well suited for a place like New York.
Well, I've been there many times.
Yeah, temperamentally, you know, you could blend in New York.
Well, I don't blend in Los Angeles. I'm a beautiful man, you know. Fabio is afraid to share the stage with me. You know?
I just want to come to Thanksgiving at your house.
Well,
I want to be related. Can we be related?
You'd have to contend with my liberal sister. My sister moved in with me. She's a great woman. She's a former banker, that kind of thing. And we have arguments all the time about politics and culture and that sort of thing. She and her husband lost their house in that big Altadena fire.
Oh.
What do we get here in California? Let me point something out. We've spent, what, $40, $80 billion on this ridiculous bullet train 17 years later. Not one inch of track has been laid in this
state.
High-cost
rail.
And they're wanting more money.
But Bill is exactly correct.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share with you the certainty that Walt Disney laid more track in Anaheim in 1953 than these SOBs have laid in 17 years. Okay?
Guaranteed.
Yeah, positively. And the purpose of it was never to build a train. We fall into the trap when we say, well, when are you going to build the train? Is it ready yet? You know, is it going to be high speed or low speed? They were never going to build a train. The purpose of it was to loot you, was to pick your pocket, and to reward their donors. That was the sole purpose of the quote-unquote bullet train.
You know,
it's garbage.
I heard a while back that they were going to audit that whole situation and find out where all this money went. Where'd that ever go?
I think the auditor got kidnapped and taken to Mars or something. Bill, it's super weird that you'd ask. I think Gavin Newsom is going to have Rob Bonta work on figuring out where he went any minute now.
I feel so much better now.
Right.
Because that's likely to happen. They're not calling you?
I'm radioactive as far as they're concerned. I'd love to work on it. If somebody came up with the money for me to work on it and gave me the power of subpoena, I'd go to work on it. I would. It hasn't happened yet, but I guess it could. Maybe I'll run for county sheriff in Los Angeles. Maybe all of California needs a
sheriff. We might move down there just to vote for you. Yeah, because because the list is pretty awesome, like kidnapping, robbery, homicide, assault, hijacking, extortion, workplace theft, mass tort, conflict of interest, investigations for a variety of clients, including industry, private trusts, law firms, financial institution, and private parties. So it's kind of like
all-purpose BI. Government too. Yeah, somebody has to do this work. I don't do cheating husbands. By the time an insurance company is calling me to handle a claims investigation, it's because they're already lit on fire and in a desperate corner. and I charge them a premium. You'd be amazed, Bill, Aaron. I'm the guy who gets a premium from the insurance company. They hate calling me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I can do the work. In fact, if I was to give him the authority to conduct that kind of investigation and the funding, I would get all of the Brady List sheriff's deputies in Southern California and go through and separate out the ones who aren't physically fit, and that would be my task force.
Nice.
All of the ones that the left says can't be trusted with police matters.
Yeah, you're like, I want those guys.
Those are the ones that I want.
Nils, I can't believe we only had you on for an hour. I knew this was going to be a bad idea. We have to do this again.
We will be
contacting you soon.
Well, how about I fly up there next time and sit in the studio with you, too?
Oh, my God, that'd be so great. We'll assemble a crowd outside the studio for you. Angry Mob one, though.
No, I like Angry Mobs.
I do,
all about the Angry Mob, okay? So
all right.
You guys have a fantastic day. I want to thank you for giving me the privilege of sharing the airwaves with you.
Appreciate
you
coming on.
Thanks a million. We will talk soon.
Thank you.
Somebody gotta shake things up. Somebody gotta shut things down. Somebody gotta strike a match, break the ice about the first round. Somebody gotta go all night. Somebody gotta dig down deep. Mean what they say, say what they mean. The way I see, you might as well be me. Might as well be me. Yeah, might as well be me. Stage lights cold as a winter rain. One breath, one prayer, then the world went strange. Crowd froze up when the thunder cracked. Truth on a mic and a life attack. He talked about hope in a storming land. Bible in the heart and a promise in his hands. But a shadow reached from a coward's perch. Cut down a sun in the middle of church. And I swear if the tables turned the other way, y'all know there'd be fires in the streets today. But here we stand with candles and a folded flag, begging God for mercy on the road we drag. How dare they steal the breath from a faithful man? How dare they stain the grass where his boots once stand? They call us evil, point at our cross, then pull that trigger and reckon no cost. If it were ain't letting go of your hand.
Thought we would do it at the top of the second hour, too. Sorry about that. Didn't realize our...
We will have Sharon one moment.
We will? Oh, okay. We were having a little scramble there. Sharon was tied up or something after talking to Nils. I don't know.
MIA.
Her texting and calling in a panic. What's happening? Anyway, so let's put Sharon's bio up here for the people who haven't heard her. She's been on here before. She is with an organization called WOLF, W-O-L-F, the Women's Liberation Front. Sharon Byrne is a nonprofit and government relations expert with over two decades of advocacy leadership experience. She brings to WOLF vital community building experience connections, currently serves as the president of the Santa Barbara United Nations Association, served as a delegate to the UN Conference on Status of Women and the Generation Equity Forums. So now you're thinking, like, this lady sounds like a crazy liberal. This is like a 1960s women's lib thing. No. No, actually, it's not. The Women's Liberation Front fights in the front lines of feminism and not the bad kind that you're thinking of. This is about transgenderism. That was really the genesis of how they started in the early 90s. And we have done a bunch of shows with her, actually. You might want to check on wethepeopleradio.us. You can find that under the transgender Tab up there. We've done some shows with her. And they defend women who are trapped in women's prisons with men pretending to be women and a whole host of other things. But we'll let her tell you about that. And oddly enough, had her booked quite a while ago. We've been going around and around and around on the dates, and just so happens was on the weekend right after the Charlie Kirk assassination, at which point we thought, gee whiz, I wonder if the transgender thing is involved in this too, and shazam, there it is again. Sharon, I had already titled this show like weeks ago, waiting for this to land, Trans Rights Are Killing Us. Little did I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
What about the irony there?
I know. I almost changed it because I thought, wow, that's kind of horrible and shocking. But I thought, it is horrible and shocking, and I guess we should just say it.
It is. I mean, if we just back up a little bit, you know, Aaron, it has been the most insane week, right, for a lot of reasons. You know, when I got up Wednesday morning, my mom was in a complete meltdown. She said, oh, my God, Putin sent drones over into Poland, right? And, you know, here comes the start of World War III, right? That was Wednesday morning, right? Like, we were looking like, you know, it looked very much like World War III was going to try to crank up, right? And everybody knows that when you get involved in massive wars in Europe, everybody else gets involved in them too, right? So, like, it kind of engulfs everybody. This is not a good thing. I'm sure Putin was just testing NATO's defenses, but it rattled everybody, right? And NATO responded appropriately, but people are rattled, right? That was Wednesday morning. Literally at 11, right, is when I found out that Charlie Kirk had first been shot. And, of course, the videos were circulating like mad. And then as soon as I saw the video, I knew there was no way he was going to survive. And he was announced dead, you know, an hour later. And this is, you know, as a feminist, Charlie Kirk and I weren't on the same page, you know, on some things, right? As you can imagine. But I did appreciate that he, like us, had problems with men calling themselves women. He knew this was all bad news, and it was stupid, and, you know, he was very much on our side on that. And he also actually opposed commercial surrogacy, which we opposed. So, you know, you can always find common cause, you know, with folks on things, even if you're not coming from the same, you know, political backgrounds or what have you. And, you know, we're nonpartisan anyway. We work with everybody. But I think I was in a state of shock all day Wednesday. Absolute state of shock. And, you know, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal both ran with the bullet engravings and saying it had something to do with trans.
Yeah.
They retracted that and said, no, they were wrong. It was gaming memes, right? And I don't spend any time in gamer land, and probably you don't either, so
yeah.
All that went over my head. But that's where that came out of. But then on Saturday it broke that I guess he had a transgender furry roommate, right? And one of the engravings.
Oh, my God, it was a furry, too?
Yeah, one of the engravings definitely. The oh, whoa, notice that bulge, right? That was definitely a reference to furries, right? Which is loosely affiliated with the trans stuff. So, you know, what you can say is he's 22, the kid that did this, if it was him. And I still don't know for 100% that it is, right? That's the other thing about this. They all move so fast. You probably saw that they had put up no less than 3 suspects on social media, none of which turned out to be the guy, right?
Yeah.
We were all wrong, right? So, you know, one thing I learned on Wednesday for sure is the media couldn't get it right, and social media certainly couldn't get it right, right? Like, it was just, we got red herrings all over the place. But there were people that I talked to from both sides of the aisle, I'm sure you did too, and we all felt a lot of shock and kind of horror over this, like Kelly or not, you know, thought he was great or not. You know, something terrible has happened. And it really shook, I would say, the collective consciousness. Is that kind of what you picked up too?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, he was speaking. He didn't have people tied to a chair and yelling at them. He went to college campuses and invited discussion. If you didn't want to be part of it, you didn't have to go. It wasn't
exactly
like he had a captive audience. I mean, but he didn't belittle. He didn't shame anybody. He didn't call them names or swear at them or kill their microphone. He was really a calm and measured and sensible person. And if he didn't agree, it wasn't like he got mad. It's like, okay, he just wasn't changing his mind. And for that, you shoot somebody?
yeah, this went, this really shook everybody. I mean, it shook people, you know, I'd say across the spectrum. It feels different. It feels like something's really changed. You know, and I gotta tell you, I'm sitting here in lovely Santa Barbara where, you know, Elliot Rodger went and shot up, you know, the University of California, because he was so mad that girls wouldn't give him sex after he'd been hanging out in the poisonous chat rooms. Remember that?
No. First time I'd ever heard the word incel. Say that again? Which one was this?
Back in 2014, a young guy, went up to the University of California at Santa Barbara and shot five people dead, did a mass shooting, right? And then shot himself. It was Elliot Rodger. And it was the first time that we were like, what is with this young guy? You know, why this young guy, right? Why was he so angry? And our county sheriff, who's great, Sheriff Bill Brown, he read Elliot's manifesto. And it was just full of hate and vitriol and rage at women for not giving him sex. Because he'd been hanging out in these chat rooms, called the Manosphere, I guess, where they'd all told him that you gotta get game and then you'll get girls. And so he was very angry. With women, and this was the first time we'd ever heard the term incel, involuntary celibate. Remember that?
Yeah. So, forgot about that.
11 years later, I see another young guy, you know, out of nowhere, shooting Charlie Kirk. Doesn't like what Charlie has to say, I guess, whatever. And, you know, he's 22, and we've had a lot of, I want to say, brain development experts that have come out in recent years saying, man, your brain is not fully formed until 25. You're not going to understand context and nuance. So if you're in the online world for hours a day just eating all the garbage that the online world can throw at you, you don't have, like, say, the kind of self-defense mechanisms you and I have, Aaron, you know, after years of arguing with people and building up a worldview, right? Like, the younger people don't have that yet. They don't have it. And there's a reason, like, the U.S. Army loves to get you as a young man and send you off to war before you're 25, because they also know your brain's not done. And they know that you don't understand your own mortality. Or the fact that you could be maimed for life, right? So, like, it's well known that, you know, young people need some time to develop. I was just chatting with a newspaper editor here about an hour ago, and he was commenting on the fact that he had been noticing for years the toxic messaging that we've been giving young boys in this country as they develop. And I completely agree. You know, telling them they're all a bunch of colonizing white supremacists is really not going to produce a lot of great mental health, don't you think? It's probably not going to lead to happy places.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I think about that kind of toxic brew all stirring around in there, and, you know, you got as many guns you can get your hands on in Utah, I cannot imagine how bad things aren't going to happen, right? Like, I don't want to monster this kid, you know, at 22 and say, oh, he's the most terrible thing on the planet. I don't want to do that, but I can see the poison trail to how he got here. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, because you can, I don't spend a huge amount of time on social media, but somebody had sent me a link, and then, you know, there's always some other thing that pops up to try to suck away your time. But it was actually a picture of him, it was a post his mom did back in 2020, and she's like, here's my son, and he looked just like this really clean cut kid, right? Here's my son, and he's got a 4.0, and he's doing so well, and all this stuff, and you think, dang, 5 years later? He's looking at, you know, he's facing the needle, or whatever they do over there.
Yeah, and again, he's 22,
right.
22. So it's like, what the heck was he looking at? What world was he, you know, in? What material was he consuming? You know, the fact that even the FBI and the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms guys did not know what those gaming memes meant, right? Those kids are moving in some world that the rest of us are not navigating. And we don't know they're saying to each other in there, but whatever it was, you know, he certainly got a poison pill, right? And he turned around and carried it out. In the early days, the early minutes, I mean, I will tell you, you know, you're a woman who does news, so you know this, you know, there's headlines that you run with and you vet your sources and blah, 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 right? And I literally watched major media like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times run with a headline, have to collapse, retract within 5 hours, you know, like,
yeah.
Nobody could get the story right, right?
So they've, like, gotten kind of, they've been doing that lately. It's almost like the rush to judgment is,
well, they have to be first.
That's the thing. It's a race, and somehow being wrong is no longer seen as a bad thing.
I 1,000% agree with you. I think that the major error that's being made right now is this rush to judgment. like everybody wants to run in first and capitalize, you know, monetize their social media accounts. Or, I was the first one to say it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I think the rest of judgment was really bad here because at first it was he's trans and it was no, actually that's not true, he's a gamer. Okay. Then he's a rabid leftist. No, he has a Republican family. Okay, well then he got radicalized at university. He was there one freaking quarter in 2021. And it's a conservative university. He was at a Votech school. Are they hotbeds now of, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was there for one, like, I mean, he was there for a minute.
Yeah, right? So it's like, you know, something else got to this kid, right? Something else. And everybody's very, very quick to do all this judging. I don't know what the something else is because I don't know the kid and I didn't inhabit the world that he's been hanging out in, but some snippets have come out enough to get a somewhat of a picture. But yeah, we poisoned that guy somehow in the culture. And I take, you know, responsibility for that too, that somehow or another, there's this culture that's very toxic and he got caught in it. And then he did something really horrible. And he, again, he's a young guy and, you know, I wasn't dumb when I was 22, but I wasn't as smart as I am now for sure. And I thought I knew things back then that clearly were wrong, you know, and also, you know, when I was very young, I listened to U2 and I thought I was going to grow up and join the IRA and become a terrorist, right? And I was 15, you know, so we're all capable of being young and stupid is what I'm trying to say. But I don't want to be so fast to damn him. I really do want to, what he did is a terrible thing, but what I want to, if it was him, again, I'm still not 1,000% sure. I just don't have a definitive yet, right? But I want to understand, like, what is the toxic brew that got you there? And how do we go fight that? How do we dismantle that? And how do we stop this rush to judgment? Because right now, it's sticking people on other people. And I also feel like, you know, maybe I'm too conspiratorial theorist here and too much, you know, looking at the world situation. But we know social media is infested with Chinese and Russian bots that would really love for us to turn on each other, right? They would love it because they will benefit if Americans are divided. So I'm trying really hard not to get to that place, right, and hold on to my sanity and not be ginned up by people who I'm not even sure are other Americans. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right, because you don't know. You don't know where these things are coming from, but, you know, it's been widely known and for a long time, right?
Oh,
how
yeah.
do they take us down from the inside?
I got caught up in an argument on X with a guy who named something like Gunter Engelman, and he's flying a big U.S. flag and all that. And he started just attacking me that the attacks didn't make much sense. They were built to sound like really horrible right-wing attacks on a feminist, right? They didn't make a whole lot of sense. And when I went and looked at his profile, I was like, oh, my God, you're a straight-up propaganda account. That's all this. I'm arguing with a bot, right? I'm arguing with, and it, the guy who's running this bot is probably some asshole in Russia, right? Excuse my French.
Yeah.
You know, but like, right away, I was like, oh, my God, I just got ginned up, and I don't even think it's another American. I think I got ginned up by a fake propaganda account.
Yeah. And there's going to be more of that. The difficulty is, and, you know, we've talked about it with people that we've interviewed about AI and
oh, yeah.
like articles and commentary on AI. And the one thing everybody always kind of ends with is, the way we will always beat AI is it's not clever. It doesn't do kind of the kinds of things that we do, the inference and all that. It doesn't know how to do any of those things.
No.
And we can ferret that out because we communicate with actual people face to face. The difficulty is we have a lot of people who don't do that anymore, and they don't pick up on the facial cues. They don't even know how. So you put them in the real world, and they don't even know how. Like, they, you know, people at work, they don't want to pick up the phone. They want to send, I sent an email. Did you call them? Oh, well, no, I sent them an email. Pick up the phone. Like, talk to a human.
1,000% agree. My daughter said, she asked me if I had seen the Gen Alpha Stare. And I said, what the heck? I have no idea what the Gen Alpha Stare is. And she said,
yeah,
I guess
that?
These kids are, they're not able to do the social interaction and they're not able to read body language or interpret social cues. So you say something and they just stare hard at you for like 30 seconds. It's very awkward and very uncomfortable and you can't tell what's going on. And eventually they'll come back with something, but you realize they've just never been trained to engage in repartee. Like right away you realize like, oh wow, you don't know how to do discourse. And so you just kind of go into freeze mode, you know, and stare at me. And I'm sitting here going, what the heck is happening, right? Are they having a stroke or, you know, like what's going on with them? And what you realize is they just don't have that back and forth dialogue capability. They just don't have it. I don't know if it's a function of the pandemic. I don't know if it's a function of living too much in social media, right, and not in the real world. I don't know what it is. But something is very, she said something, she's a Gen Z, and she's like, there's something very different about them. And that, she said, that stare is really scary. I had no idea.
Well, the hard part is that if you can't read those, if you don't routinely, like, I'll read things that people write, and that was my, that's always been my world is writing. And I'll read things that people write, and I'm kind of critical. And so sometimes I'm like, well, this person, you know, is monosyllabic, and that's not probably good. But then I'll read it, and I'll go, wait a minute, I don't think this is a person. This person doesn't reason like a person, doesn't write like a human. And I'm pretty sure, and there's a guy that sends out emails in a group I'm part of, and, you know, for a long time I thought, this guy doesn't write his own stuff. He's using AI for everything. Sure enough. Oh, yeah, I use AI for everything. It's like, okay, well, we can tell. Learn how
to
write.
We can. I've read some copy generated by AI, and I had the same exact response of, like, this is not something that a thinking, writing, as you know, is first the act of thinking. That in order to put something down on paper and to be able to make it make sense and to hang it together in a narrative, right, and to make some points and to be able to draw a conclusion, you have had to already do the thinking before you put the pen to the paper, right?
Yeah.
So you can tell when something is coming across you and you're like, you didn't do anything before you put this on paper. Oh, of course you didn't because you're AI. but
the hard part is these guys, like this, you know, 20-something, if he's living in that kind of a world, he's not discerning, he's not bouncing his ideas off people who say, hey, that's probably not a good idea.
I think that is true. I think that the people that are under 25 whose brains have not finished developing, and by the way, do you know what it is that causes the final brain development from like 20 to 25? I think there's some chemical, I've forgotten the name of it, but it gets going in your brain. This is your body's, you know, like nudge to you of finished developing here. And it compels you to socialize because you finish your development through socialization. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
So if you haven't had any socialization, what happens?
I think we're starting to find out what happens.
Yeah.
Right? Or if the socialization you've had is poor, then you're not going to get that full frontal development at your frontal core that you need. And there is some evidence, again, I'm not a doctor, so I want to just caveat that, but I've read some papers that I think are compelling, where they studied like the brains of narcissists and serial killers. And they have found that that frontal core, that's the reasoning part of you, the part of you that gets context and nuance, et cetera, that's almost been eviscerated in those individuals physically. It's almost non-existent, meaning the reptilian part of their brain is much stronger. So even if you were pleading for your life before a serial killer, they actually cannot see you as human. Like, they literally don't possess the physiological capabilities in the brain to see you as a human being worthy of dignity and rights in life, right? Like, they just
it doesn't tug on their heartstrings, as they say.
Yeah, they don't have it. And so I'm wondering, we are conducting some social experiments on very young people on mass scale, and we have no idea how this turns out, right? We have no idea, but this kind of indicator with what happened this week should be an alarm bell for everyone.
Yeah, I think those of us who are not AI actually see how it is turning out. Well, Sharon, we got to take a quick break. I just noticed it's 1:27. When we come back, it's Bill's turn. But I thought I'd lighten it up. Found a couple of fun songs, and I got a couple other fun songs. So we'll have some fun songs, and then talk to our guest, Sharon Byrne from Wolf. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side.
song never gets tiresome for me. I wonder what AI thinks of that song. I got another one. I've got a new one.
Next, what?
I got a new one. Got a new one for you. It's in my transgender list of songs. I'm always hunting up some new ones for you.
You always come up with the best ones.
So much good material. Actually, I went to the Wayback Machine for the next one. So all of this medication, we don't really talk about that much with you, but they talk about there was always a thing with the antidepressants, you know, that was making people go over center. That was kind of in the crosshairs for a while.
I remember that, like in the 90s with Prozac, right, where people were taking that and shooting themselves, right?
Yeah, right? They were going berserko, and it's like, oh, well, it's the SSRIs doing it. And now that's kind of fallen away, but there doesn't seem to be much discussion. I've read a few things about the young women that are taking heavy amounts of testosterone. It's making them kind of go nutso a little bit. It's a medical term.
We have a famous example, right? We have a very famous example that, you know, it's funny. Sometimes one of the drugs that they will prescribe for menopause, actually, is testosterone, which seems odd. But apparently, as a woman goes through that change, you know, she has estrogen that drops. She has progesterone that drops, right? But she also has testosterone that drops. And women are not dominant in testosterone, obviously. That's dominant in men. But we do have some, and it does give us our energy and our fight and some other things, right? So, you know, sometimes they'll prescribe testosterone for women who, you know, are going through the menopause. And some of the women that take it report instantly. They feel more aggressive and much more sexual desire. Like, instantly, they start getting that response, right? And it's the testosterone. So do you remember 2 years ago, Audrey Hale, the girl that shot up the Memphis school?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And she was a transgender, right? And she was a female that was taking testosterone. And a bunch of us looked at each other and immediately started wondering, like, when you put girls, you know, OD them on a hormone that they were not meant to have that high of a level in, you know, and we had seen that in sports, right? We had seen that there was definitely an advantage in the Olympics given to Chinese and German women who doped, right, with testosterone to races. And there was a lot of outrage about that. But, you know, we wondered, you know, like, if you put that much testosterone into a girl's body, a still developing girl, what happens to her? Now, we know from the detransitioners, it's terrible. But they all do report a high level of rage and anger, right, than they ever had just as regular females, right? So, you know, I do think there is something to putting medications into the body that the body is not meant to run on, and certainly not those levels, and that it will do some things to you. Right, that, and for all I know, you know, being on that much testosterone caused that girl to decide to pick up a firearm and go shoot the kids in the school. I thought it was terrible. I mean, it was terrible. It was very shocking and horrible. But, you know, she was definitely on a high level of testosterone when she did it.
And so, what about these guys take all this medication? And are they? I mean, is anybody even looking into this? You spend a lot more time in this world than we do.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
in the you know, we want updates on your work in the prisons and stuff too. I haven't been following that as closely. Like, they're taking.
There is a lot happening there.
Yeah, they're taking drugs. They're giving them the transitioning drugs, right? Putting these men in women's prisons, and I mean, I guess I was going to say, how's that all working out? But I guess I already know the answer.
You know, we hear a lot, again, watching the detransitioners is very, and I hate that word, by the way. I think that they should call themselves survivors of, you know, gender insanity. And I think the term gender-affirming care has got to be the best branding for something really horrible since the Happy Meal, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's like the best branding I've ever seen of, like, but it's gender-affirming care. It's cross-sex surgeries and hormones for children. We should not be doing that, right? So the young people that have detransitioned, and again, I'd rather call them survivors because there is no such thing as transition. You can take all the drugs you want. You can have all the procedures done that you want. It's in your DNA. Your sex is in your DNA. You cannot change it, right?
Yeah.
And so even men that have gone on the cross-sex hormones and are taking estrogen and they've managed to grow boobs, they're still men. Now, some of the younger ones have reported that they immediately started losing erections. They lost desire. You know, that they didn't feel like themselves anymore. Gosh, I wonder why, right? Because you're taking a hormone that is not meant for you, and you're overdosing on it, basically. And as you know, overdosing estrogens in women, you know, produces all kinds of things like breast and ovarian cancer, right? So this is not a good thing. We should not be shoving stuff into people's bodies that should not be there. But yes, the men lose some things too. And the question for them is, you know, is your fetish worth it? Some of them only take the estrogen long enough to grow boobs in that they can then play with, right? Cause it titillates them. This is the autogynephile set, right? That is what we used to know as transvestites that, you know, get off sexually on the idea of them being women that are then penetrated and abused and, you know, all the things that they want to do to women. They fantasize about having those things done to themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, should I admit it makes sense?
No, it's insanity.
Maybe I should lie and say I think it makes sense, but I'm not sure.
It's actually a form of insanity, and you know it was recorded as a mental illness in the Diagnostic Statistics Manual, right? That is sort of the Bible of psychology, and it was removed recently and reclassified as transgender or gender dysphoria, right? And that is some kind of valid medical condition and requires you to take cross-sex hormones, which is all BS anyway. But you never can become the opposite sex. It's a lie. It's a terrible lie. And again, when we talk about children who haven't finished developing that reasoning, thinking brain, right, and you tell them, well, you take this C, and you can just get right on out of that body that you don't like so much, we are doing them a terrible crime. That is a heinous crime to be put on children. We should never be doing this.
Yeah, I can't say that I disagree at all. And now they've kind of rolled that back, and that. Okay, so your organization, since that's really something you focus on all the time, this rollback of the mom who gets to take the son and turn him into a girl, and the dad loses all his rights and all that, is that getting better now?
Yes.
With some of these changes?
Yeah, yes and no. So welcome to the American system. We got here because Congress didn't do anything. And so the president issued a series of executive orders in January that forbid child transitioning and surgeries, right, that ordered men out of women's prisons, and that, you know, basically said there are only two sexes in the United States, male and female. We're not recognizing anything else. Stop putting this on your passport, right? You could get your passport altered, right? And at one point, the Biden administration was offering an X on your passport for sex. And so
that's terrific security.
Right? They ordered the end of men playing in girls' sports, right? You know, a slew of executive orders. And we were all, like, so relieved, and that lasted 4 minutes until they all got blocked in court, basically, except for the sports one, right? They've all been blocked in court. I have to give props to the Department of Education and Linda Mahan and Harmeet Dhillon, the women in that department, which is going to be done away with, but they have basically gone after California. They've gone after schools in Minneapolis. They've gone after schools in Virginia and told them they're out of compliance with Title IX by continuing to let boys play a girl sports, right? And they're threatening to withhold funding. So I have to give the feds some props here. They are trying really hard. There are 4 bills coming through Congress that will do some of this work, such as getting the men out of women's prisons, right? And so we've been encouraging supporters to contact their congressional reps and get them to sign on to those bills and get them passed. And then we went to court ourselves 2 weeks ago because this will make you crazy. There are so many court cases called Doe versus Bondi that have been filed to stop the president's executive orders. Most of the Doe v. Bondi cases are actually related to immigration. But 3 of them were related to men and women's prisons. And we got a chance to intervene and put a brief in, and we listened to the case being heard in the D.C. Appellate Court last Friday. And I feel like it's going to go our way. GLAD brought the lawsuit to block the executive order. GLAD used to stand for decent things.
And
right?
What's GLAD again?
Gays and lesbians against, I think, like discrimination and defamation, right? They used to stand for pretty... Yeah, they used to be pretty, they're the group that tried really hard to get gay marriage fit, you know, done in the United States. They've moved to being an all-trans, all-the-time group, like the ACLU, right? And so they filed a lawsuit to block the executive order. We listened to the court case. I feel like the appellate judges are going to go our way. They were interesting. There was 3 of them. One was, like, trying to figure out how to get out of even hearing the case. One of them was clearly on our side because he was saying things like, why are biological males in women's prisons? And GLAAD brought the case on behalf of like 19 individuals who some say could pass for women, that they should allow them to stay in the women's prison and not transfer them to the men. Well, that judge said, well, how come the other 1,400 were already transferred back? The other 1,400 men were already transferred back. Did you know?
No.
1,400 men got put back in the men's prison from the women's prison that said that they were women. He said, why do those not matter? So we could tell he was on our side. The female judge was a real disappointment. She was trying to carry the water for GLAAD. It was really disappointing. So I feel like, you know, we're going to wait and see how that case comes out. Our brief was the only brief that spoke from the voice of women who are incarcerated with men. No other brief did. And I'm glad we got it in. I was very proud of our legal team for getting that in and pushing back on this and saying, you know, this is cruel and inhuman treatment, right?
Yeah, and you're trapped in there. You're trapped in there, and then, oh, by the way, you know, here's,
Oh, it violates Article 8 of the Constitution, cruel and inhuman punishment, right? It violates Article 11 of the United Nations minimum treatment for standards for prisoners, which is basically men and women have to be kept in separate facilities. So we're not, and California legislated this. California legislates that you put men in women's prisons. I still can't believe we did that. I still can't believe that Governor Newsom signed it.
I want to be shocked, but I'm not. We have to take a really quick break. So we'll go to the Wayback Machine with Joni Mitchell from the 60s, a song that kind of makes sense. And then we'll zoom forward to the 80s with one that you'll never guess. I should make you guess, but we've run out of time. And I saw it in an Uncle Buck clip from an Uncle Buck movie, and I was like, yes, that is the best song ever. Anyway, spoiler alert, our guest is Sharon Byrne. And trans rights are killing us, honestly. Time to get with the program. You can find all the archives and stuff at
wethepeopleradio.us.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined when out of his sight to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs, or ands, or buts. Say, as a child, I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas. But I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be. Now I
heard. I went up to this girl. She said, hi, my name is Sheena. I thought she'd be good to go with a little funky. Oh, my daddy. She said, I don't like a drink. I said, well, I'll go get it. And then a couple of sips, she go lick the lips, and I knew that she was with it. So I took her to my crib, and everything went well as planned. And when she got undressed, it was a big old mess. Sheena was a man. So I threw her mouth. I don't fool around with no Oscar Mayer wiener. You must be sure that your girl is pure for the funky cold Medina. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no plans with a man. This is the 80s and Loke is down with the ladies. No joke.
I had totally forgotten that song and that line. That was great.
This is the 80s. I'm all about the ladies. I'm like, what happened? Okay, bottom line is I didn't actually ever know what the heck the guy was saying. I just always thought the song was kind of fun. And so I'm watching some, it was like a bunch of clips of John Candy. And that was in Uncle Buck, remember?
I had no memory of that.
I did. And the minute the song played, I'm like, that's like, I gotta look that song up. So I pulled it up on YouTube, and it seems like everything has lyrics now on there. unlike when we were, you know, listening to a lot of this growing up, if you didn't buy the album and it wasn't printed inside the album cover, like, you never knew what they were saying. So anyway, I pull it up and I'm watching the lyrics as the guy's talking, and I thought, oh, wow. Sheena was a man. I was like, well, Sharon's going to like this. I got to get her.
I love it.
I've been sitting on that for 6 months. It's been just absolutely driving me. I wanted to email it to you, and I'm like, nope, I'm not going to do it. Anyway.
I totally forgot that.
Right? So back in the 80s, we knew, you know, Sheena was a man, and we could call it. So if you need any music for your court cases, there you go.
Do you know when I first learned what a transsexual was? Do you know when I first found out what that was?
I'm afraid to ask.
Okay. I was 12 years old.
Oh.
The year was 1980, and the movie Dress to Kill came out, where Michael, oh, God, what's his name? He's so brilliant, the British actor.
Michael Caine?
Michael Caine. It is. It is him.
Go
he plays
Bill.
That cross-dresser. And mm-hmm. That's when I first... I didn't even remember, because I didn't see it until I was actually much older, that the Psycho movie also had featured that cross-dresser, right? That murdered everybody. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
Norman Bates liked to dress up in his mother's clothes, right? But I wouldn't see that movie until I was much older, because I think I saw it in like a film studies class or something. It had long gone off screen, you know, and off TV before I came around. But I do remember I watched HBO that had just come out, and I stayed up late one night, and I watched something I really should not have been watching as a 12-year-old. And that's when I first learned what cross-dressers were and that they were really scary.
Yeah, and they want to normalize all that and have been normalizing all that especially for children. It always freaks me out, all these people that will take their little kids to these, you know, drag queen story hour and all this stuff and, you know, run up and put money in their shirt or whatever. It's like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, it's the normalization of fetish and kink, and it is completely wrong, and it has gone in so many bad areas. There was a... Oh, gosh, this came around about 6 months ago. There was a, I think it's called Kinabuki or something like that. It's this Japanese art of binding. And what you do is, you know, you submit to this binding, and your lover, you know, puts you in all these contorted positions with ropes, et cetera. And so somebody in Australia had thought it was a really good idea to put up a giant mural of that, of a woman basically being hung upside down, you know, on her knees, being bound with her feet, you know, up against her butt, and, you know, in strange contortionist positions. And, you know, little kids were going to be walking by that.
Yikes.
Like, what are you thinking? You know, like, I've been to plenty of drag queen shows. They're hilarious. They're campy, whatever. I would never have taken a 2-year-old to one of those things. That is adult entertainment, right? Like, that is what that is. That is not for kids. And I think it's wrong to normalize that. I think it's wrong because you're teaching, especially young people, again, who don't have context, right, of, you know, like, take all the guardrails off, kiddos. You know, this is all normal and good, except the day that it's not good because the pervert shows up, right? Like, it's not okay to do this.
But the other part of it is regular, you know, for the most part, your love life, your sex life, all that is a little bit mundane in the real world as life goes on. It's not like it, you know, it's just not weird and fireworksy like that. You know, forever and ever and ever. And if it is, what the heck are you doing with your time? Said the girl who went to Catholic school in Connecticut. So it might have just been my upbringing. But you look at that and you think, well, then normal seems like they're doing it wrong. You know, seems like their life isn't exciting enough.
It does, and, you know, because of the way that the Internet works, right, there's no filtering, there's no, anything off, right? I mean, any 11-year-old can dial up a rape video, right? Like, there's no filtering. There was a really good couple of documentaries that just came out from Exodus Cry, and I happened to watch both of them. And one was on porn, and one was on prostitution, and they took an interesting angle with this. It's not, if you'd asked me to invest in the film, I would have walked away from it. The angle that they took was, instead of on looking at the women survivors, what they did was they interviewed normie men. These were just everyday normie guys, married with children, worked as a firefighter, you know, preached in the church, you know, they were pastors in their community, et cetera. And they walked you through how they got sucked in through the porn filter all the way into basically going to commit rape. you know, on a woman. Or they were off buying women that they even knew were trafficked women, that did not have control of the situation. And it gave them no pause, and they felt like because they'd seen these things in porn, when they bought the woman to go have sex with her, whatever she was wanting to do or not do was immaterial. They were going to act out what they saw in the porn film. And this was a very humanizing look. I just want to make that clear. It was a very humanizing look that you didn't, you know, feel sorry for these men, you know, but you understood how a regular, normal Joe could get sucked down that hole so far that he lost his wife, he lost his job, he lost everything, you know, in pursuing this. And I think that's really important for us to think about, of like, what is the media that you're being exposed to and what is it doing to your mind? You know, and how far is it taking you out of the bound, you know, that we always say, well, there's a difference between what happens online and in real life. No, those are getting blurred. They're getting very blurred. And I think it's very, again, we're conducting mass social experiments with no idea how it turns us, you know, out. And some of the guys reported that the porn algorithms in particular, you know, would start showing you more and more like really violent stuff or even stuff involving kids for you to get the same hit. The algorithm is geared to push more and more violence or push trans porn on you. Pornhub tried that experiment. They started sending more and more trans porn through the algorithm to young men to see if they could change their sexuality. And now trans porn is one of the most hot. Did you know?
I didn't even know there was a thing called, what'd you call it, Pornhub?
Pornhub. Huh? Oh, yeah. Pornhub is the devil. It's a Canadian company. They operate around the world. They'll let you upload anything. You can upload a human trafficking video, a rape video, a child assault video. You can upload anything to them. And they do not check it.
It's not legal.
It's because they're a Canadian firm. The ability to regulate this is very hard. The French government actually just lost in the French Supreme Court against Pornhub. That because Pornhub is operated off of Cyprus, in the European Union, France could not ban Pornhub out of France because one member state cannot control what another member state does in the European Union. Same problem in the United States, by the way. So what we've been doing is Wolf has been pushing, age verification legislation, and we've got it done in 26 states. And as soon as it basically tests you, are you over 18, right? And it will not let you in unless you verify your age. Now, you're not supposed to keep the data. You're not supposed to, you know, watch what people are watching. But you have to verify that you're over 18 to enter the porn site. We helped pass that law. We just defended it before the Supreme Court in January, and won. And I got to tell you, that dropped porn usage in the state by about 80%. Pornhub themselves reported that.
Wow.
And so, yeah, they've been very resistant to taking down rape videos. They've had police call them and say, look, you know, I'm trying to help this victim, and you keep letting that video of her rape get uploaded. And Pornhub's like, so what? They were not responsive at all. So this is the direction the U.S. has been trying to go in. So has the European Union, because they've all started recognizing, like, this is actually sick material that's been uploaded. It's not Playboy. It's not anything you ever grew up seeing in porn. It's super sick. And, you know, in the U.K., 14-year-old girls started showing up at the hospital with, you know, strangulation marks on their necks and anal tearing because their boyfriends were watching this kind of porn, and this is what women like. And it's terrible. Like, this is, we are not doing right by training people this way, but that's
what. And then we're surprised when they go berserk and do, you know, bad things.
Violent things. Yes, very much so. We are very surprised by that, and we should not be. We are, most of us are not navigating the worlds that our kids are navigating, right? They are not. And so you're kind of blind. And back in the day, Aaron, you know, you and I'd have to go to the park to go meet the pervert. Now the pervert comes right in on the phone, and you can be sitting next to your mom, you know, and the pervert comes right in over the phone, right? So you don't have to leave the house, right, to find the pervert. They find you. And that's this world that we've created. It's really a sick world, so we should not be surprised when young people. I'm not excusing anything that guy did. I'm not in any way justifying, you know, the murder of Charlie Kirk. I was very shocked and appalled and upset by it. But I'm understanding that when you push kids into kind of a sewer of material, and it's not regulated, and it's not, you know, you have no control over what they're looking at, or who's talking to them, or
right,
who's, you know, trying to message them, we should expect terrible outcomes. There's just no way this ends well.
Yeah.
Well, and the problem is it's been out there long enough now where it's starting to come to fruition, and you can't shut it off overnight. I mean, these kids are already programmed, and you know they're just getting started more or less.
Yeah, they're all well, and they're all you know, legal adults, right? They move out of the house, and you know, I mean, yes, they're your kids forever, but not in that way.
No, not in that way. And I think, you know, I want to sound a little upbeat here at the end. One call that I would like to put out to all my fellow countrymen and women is, you know, please don't jump on each other right now. You know, we're getting very ginned up and pointing fingers at everybody. It's the left. It's the right. It's the universities. It's, you know, like, this is not helpful, right? This is actually not helpful. I don't want us to turn on each other. And I especially don't want us being ginned up by foreign actors who would love to see us at each other's throats, right? Like, I want us to take a deep, hard look at, like, what have we been up to, and what is the world that our kids is navigating, and how can I do something, you know, about that world? And there is a lot of good legislation coming through that will help us do some of this.
Yeah.
Some of it's coming through Congress, some of it's coming through the states, you know, support organizations like Women's Liberation Front that try to get at the scourge of this stuff.
Yeah, and bottom line is we have to stand up, step up, and talk to actual people. You know,
that's the other thing.
Get out from behind your computer and talk to a real human. Hey, Sharon, we are fast approaching the news update and the end of the program. Thank you so much for coming on with us, and we're glad you were able to make it this morning or this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
You're the best. All right, you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.